Item 8, legislative update. I assume that's you, Karen. Thank you.
Good morning. So this is a legislative update of pending bills. So we take a moment to look at what bills are pending up in Sacramento that might interest CICERA and its board. In honor of Jerry Tellis's last meeting, I looked very, very hard for bills that are really, really interesting. And
I couldn't find any.
Unfortunately, this is what you have. So we'll get through it. You do have a memo in the packet that summarizes these bills. Of course, they're pending now, so they could still be amended, and there's no telling whether they'll actually get enacted. The first one on page one of the memo is AB 287 regarding annual audits, and this would add a requirement that an agency like CICERA would have to post the concise annual audit report on its website, which I believe we already do. Next, AB 472, that's simply a cleanup bill, so there are no substantive changes in that bill. AB 664, that's an interesting one. It has to do with the permanent incapacity prong of safety disability retirement. This bill would only apply to Sacramento County. You may recall that over the past few years, Sacramento County has had various bills pending having to do with safety disability standards. And what this bill would do is it would lower the threshold for the disability standard required for a peace officer safety member in order to receive their disability. It is also a statute. If enacted, the statute would sunset in 2024. And the legislature often does that when they are sort of experimenting with something new, and so they're putting a limit on it, and they're saying, if this gets enacted, the disability standard would get changed, but this new law would disappear in 2024. I did see in the Sacramento County Retirement Systems website that they are considering opposing this bill. Their system is, again, it would only apply to Sacramento, so it makes sense that they're thinking about whether it makes sense for their system.
Karen, before
yes.
you leave that, do you have any more information, excuse me, on what they mean by a report tracking the cost and who that report would go to and what purpose there would be for a specific, that specific
yeah.
set of?
Good question. I would speculate that because it would lower the threshold of disabilities, more disabilities would get granted, meaning an increased cost on the system and maybe on the employer as well. So they possibly would like to look at that and see what the fiscal impact is of lowering the disability standard in Sacramento. It doesn't specify who the report goes to or things of that nature.
And one of the benchmarks could be, are they otherwise qualified for retirement? And if the answer is no, then you start with zero and you go to this number. Or in some cases, they might have qualified for non-service, but wouldn't, you would assume, would qualify where it's not service-connected. But if it is service-connected, they get a higher number. So you've got the...
And I would assume that they would compare the cost of granting versus denying completely the disability.
Okay.
Yeah. Next, we have AB 992. This has to do with open meetings laws regarding social media. And it would clarify that the majority of the board members can participate in an internet-based social media platform so long as they do not discuss among themselves the business of the agency on which they sit.
So I don't know the detail. I didn't look at the bill, but this strikes me as a bad idea, I think. I'm just thinking of predominantly a Facebook type of platform where I'm just trying to conjure up where what type of site gets created so that employers, employees, and retirement board members can participate in some sort of a forum discussion. It just strikes me as antithetical to what we're supposed to be doing. I don't know where this idea came from.
I'm assuming, doesn't it apply more to Facebook, Twitter, where, for example, if I posted, boy, the Board of Supervisors made a stupid decision yesterday regarding the appointment of our new lobbying firm, and then someone else on the board said, no, it was a great decision. We should always do it this way, and when it comes back to us, I'm going to vote this way. I mean, isn't it just any current social media platform, which most electeds are on regardless? But it could raise issues. For example, I occasionally will tweet out, hey, we're going to be discussing this coming up. And another board member might also mention that also. And so then you could have potential.
Twitter struck me, because I am a Twitter user, it struck me as less concerning in a way because it's this iterative dialogue process where people comment, respond, they share, they diss the original proponent, all of the above, or the president might weigh in on any given week. whereas I was thinking really specifically of a situation where on Facebook, unlike a Twitter or other types of medium like that, you actually have the ability to dialogue directly in a forum setting, as opposed to, I know you can do it on Twitter, right? And you can reply, you can add people and all that. So there is some potential there, but Facebook struck me as uniquely capable of housing a discussion where you could actually have a fair amount of dialogue by a majority of the legislative body. It struck me as odd.
I think that what this bill tries to do is say you can participate, meaning you can be a member of that Facebook group, or you can be there, essentially, like you go to a conference, for example, but you're still not allowed to discuss among business. You on that platform the business of Cicera.
Yeah, so here's the Facebook page. Pension rants and raves, right? Because every town we're all from has a rants and raves or some variation on it. I don't know how you avoid the conclusion that if a majority of the members engage in discourse on a rants and raves site about pension facts that...
Oh, but it would be different if all of a sudden Cicera then jumped onto a specific rants and rave and we were having a dialogue saying, oh, we're going to look at changing the assumed rate of return. Should we do it or not? That sort of thing. So it's not the general public. It's us as board members. Similarly on Facebook, if Karen Mitchell posted something about closing the Pleasant Hill Library, and then I jumped on it and said, hey, Karen, I think it's a really dumb idea. Don't do it. Then you would have, potentially a third person jumping in. John Joya jumped in and said, yeah, I don't think you should close it either. Then you'd have a problem. So I think that isn't it more that sort of a situation where it's if we're interacting. And so similarly on Cicera, we shouldn't be commenting about Cicera business on any social media platform.
Yeah,
and that was
just no commentary
about the Pleasant Hill Library.
I was going to say, you didn't have to worry about John Joya blogging on because 800 other people did on that comment, right?
No, and Karen says what she thinks on
I happen to see that post, actually, by the way.
Well, thank you for keeping the library open for the summer.
So, I don't know. This one struck me. It's just a picadillo, but I didn't like it.
Well, I think it's just sort of to me, it's more of a clarifying matter rather than it's sort of protecting us, because there are a lot of things that keep making it, its way to the Supreme Court with regard to what constitutes a Brown Act violation. And so I'm a little less concerned on that.
So next is AB 1184 on the bottom of page 2. And this has to do with record retention. The Public Records Act currently doesn't have stipulations about how long the agency is supposed to keep a record. We do have our own records retention schedule that we follow, and there are some other statutes and rules that tell us how long we have to keep records. But this bill, if enacted, would require an agency to preserve for at least 2 years every writing containing information relating to the conduct of the public's business prepared, owned, or used by the agency that is transmitted by mail. So that would add that retention period and requirement for these types of records.
And I took this to be very limiting to snail mail.
Yes.
That's all this is saying.
Yes. Okay.
Sorry, with all due respect to the USPS, they don't like that expression. Sorry.
And AB 1819 on page 3, that talks about what equipment the requester of public records can use. And this would allow them to use their own equipment to photocopy records. So if someone came in and wanted to look at some records and use their phone to take a picture of them or has some portable photocopier machine, this would require the agency to allow them to do that. SB 615, this adds a meet and confer requirement for Brown Act or Public Records Act violations. And what this says is that the person who's requesting the information, who is now challenging the agency's decision not to provide it, would have to meet and confer, meaning have a discussion with the agency and talk about, you know, why they think that they're entitled to the record, and memorialize that. And before they actually go to court to file an action, they have to prepare a declaration that says, we met and conferred with the agency about this issue. It's a requirement that requires an attempt, a good faith attempt to informally resolve the dispute before going to court. Next on page 4, SB 749, and this is an interesting provision regarding trade secrets. And so what it would do is, to the extent that a private rather than public company has employees who work for under contract for the government, their information regarding their wages, benefits, working hours, and other employment terms will not be deemed to be trade secrets under the Act, meaning that they would not be exempt from disclosure, meaning that they would have to be disclosed unless some other exemption applies.
So that's a government contractor. I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name who's, I think, still residing in Russia, who took all of the sensitive data. So his firm, yeah, I know that's a security clearance issue, but I can't remember the name of the government contractor. But so ostensibly, that firm and his wage benefit information would fall into the category. The company said, "Oh, that's confidential, trade secret, proprietary, blah blah." Then the agency would not disclose that, and this bill would remove that TARP, right, and obligate it to be disclosed.
So if the agency were a California agency subject to the Act, and they had that information, they could not claim that it's exempt from disclosure under trade secrets.
Yeah, I used a bad example because it was a FOIA example, but it's stated here.
Yeah.
Okay. Would this sort of work, let's say Apple sold one phone to some agency that Apple would have to turn over, for example, all of its compensation data?
It's only the agency that's subject to the Act, not the private company. So if the agency has that information,
All right. Okay.
Then they can't claim that it's exempt from disclosure as a trade secret.
Okay.
And it says on here it's pursuant to a contract with the agency. So,
So the independent employer presumably could negotiate in the contract that they're not going to provide that information.
Right.
They could.
Yep.
Good. Yeah.
Because it only applies to wages, benefits, working hours, and employment terms.
That's all. Well, like from a private industry point of view, that certainly could be confidential.
Yeah.
If you're public, the top five are public, but you know, having all your competitors that are out trying to get your employees to know exactly what you're paying them, that clearly would be something I think you'd prefer not to do.
Hmm. Is that disclosed a lot to government agencies?
I would say RFP responses.
The RFP responses.
Yeah.
Well, we don't always receive the, you know, benefits and working hours and other employment terms related to that.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, it's just associated with the cost of the contract.
You know, the RFPs
rates,
that I'm familiar
with, schedules and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
Familiar with that, you have to identify. You may be required to identify the rate per hour that you're charging.
Yeah. Charging.
Right.
Very
yeah.
different
right.
from
what
the amount you're paying.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And lastly, we have SB 783, and that is a cleanup bill that is sponsored by Sackers, and it does not contain any substantive changes.
I have a question. I know I should know the answer to this, but do we currently have a policy that either is neutral or would preclude CSERA from taking a position on pending legislation?
No.
We don't have a policy? Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Probably just my observation, but these all have a theme running through them, sort of the transparency theme. I would suggest that somehow trying to enhance transparency or something. My guess would be the irony here is that none of these would be applicable to the state legislature. They're probably exempt from all of these things.
You're probably right.
Cynical.
Just an observation.
No, any questions for Karen? Before? Okay. Thank you very much.